Thought for today. Unjust criticism is usually a disguised compliment. Unjust criticism is usually a disguised compliment. Unjust criticism is usually a disguised compliment. Now get it. Get with it. Now, you're looking around for these papers here, you know. I give you these papers. I give you these papers. I give them out of my heart, my love. I print them up. Papers for everybody. And then you leave them here. You leave them out in the Cermix. You leave them on your seat. So, I'll make one for me. So that I give a nice talk from it. And then,
one for me for the thought of today on the web.
For me too, I think.
But there were four of them left in here. There were four of them left in here.
Because I put it on the web.
What do you mean you put it on the web?
Hmm?
What do you mean you put it on the web?
I put it on our web page, the front page.
The front page. Every day, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
When it fits, yeah. When they are too long, they don't fit.
Well, I think you're doing a stupid job. I think you probably ought to give up. There's no sense in you doing these things because who listens to it? Who reads it, huh? Who cares?
Everybody.
Who's interested in this sort of nonsense?
Not the whole world.
Nah. I'm interested because I give it, that's so. And you guys are interested because you got to sit here and take it, you know. You don't have to sit here and take it. You could just close your ears and your eyes and be unaware of it. Now, what am I doing? Please, what am I doing?
Unjust criticism.
Yes, I'm giving you unjust criticism. And you're responding to it. Shame. You see, when we respond to unjust criticism, we're taking it as criticism. What do I say to you 1,000 times a day, 1,000 times a minute, 1,000 times a second?
Agree with your adversary.
Oh, my God, yes. Agree with your adversary quickly. Why? You agree with your adversary quickly because you defuse the whole thing. There's no more problem. There's no more problem. You guys are so stupid. Don't you understand this? Haven't you got any brains in your head? Don't you realize? Agree with your adversary quickly. And there's no adversary, is there? Now, do you agree with me?
Yes.
Am I playing the role of your adversary? Yes. Unjust criticism is usually a disguised compliment. If we can take unjust criticism and be untouched by it, then it turns out to be something very wonderful. It turns out to be something very significant, very beautiful for us. But if we respond to unjust criticism in the standard way, what happens? We're nothing more than a pawn of fate. We're nothing more than letting other people rule our life and rule our affairs. And if that's what you want to do, that's fine. I'd rather be the master myself. I'd rather be the one who makes the decision for myself as to what I want. Now, all you guys, you think you're monks. Here it comes again. You think you're monks and you think you're so smart. You think you're walking your master path. You think you're being so illumined and so brilliant and so fabulous, so self-disciplined. But you're nothing. You're nothing. You're absolutely nothing. You're empty-headed, addle-brained beings who haven't got an intelligent thought in your head. Now, you're listening, a little bit thinking, and a little bit of thinking, and instead of saying to yourself, you know, I don't have an intelligent thought in my head. I have only divine thoughts in my head. I'm not bound by the intelligence and the wisdom of society around me. I'm not bound by what I have been taught, race consciousness, all of my life. I'm not bound by those intelligent things. I am only open and receptive to who I am. Now, who am I? Who am I? Who are you? Are you divine? Or are you a sort of a clone that has been created out of a copy of something else? Or are you a clown? Clowns are much nicer than the clones. If you're a clone, you can't be touched, because you are whatever is speaking to you. If you're a clone, anything that you see in your universe, you're an exact replica of. If you're a clone, you're a copy. If you're a clone, you're a duplicate. If you're a clone, you are not a creator. You are created. Now, are you cloned? Or, you know, it sounds almost like we're saying that what you see is what you are, and of course, if you're the creator, what you see out there is what you are reflecting out, so it's reflecting back to you. It's givingness, it's sharingness. But think very seriously about that. Are you letting the world about you be a creation that is not harmonious with you? If you're letting a world out there being a creation that's not harmonious with you, then what do? You create it the way you want it. Now, you cannot create it the way you want it. The law says you cannot do that. The law of gravity says you cannot float above the earth. The law of physics says you can't do this. The law of the land says you can't do that. The law of the city, the community, the family. All these laws say you can't do different things. You must put your knife and fork on your table in this certain arrangement. You must put food in your mouth at the certain range. You must eat with your fork in your left hand and your knife in your right hand, even though you're right-handed. You must eat with your fingers. You see, all sorts of laws or rules are given to us, and if we don't follow them, we're in trouble. Now, Sylvia is upset because the law at the table says you have to eat with your knife on your right hand and the fork on the left. And Sylvia says, I don't buy that at all. I don't buy that at all. And then she says, I want that changed. I want that changed. Now, let's all have a council meeting and change that so that we eat with the fork in our right hand and the knife in our left hand. Now, let's do that. And so everybody says, oh, no, you don't. That's the law, and that's what we're going to do. We're not going to change it for you. No way, you silly person. What makes you think that you have a right to ask for something yourself? This is the law. You cooperate with the law. And so then Sylvia says, I got a big fat zero there, didn't I? I wonder if there's another way to do this. Not giving up. Not saying, I'm going to eat with my knife in my right hand, you know, I keep saying one and say fork in the right hand. I'm going to eat with my knife in my right hand. Not giving up, but just putting a cause in motion and saying every day at every meal, we eat with the fork in the right hand and the knife in the left hand. You say, my God, Herb, you're giving us a lot of attention for something so silly as a knife and fork in which hand? Hey, there's nothing silly about any desire you have. Nothing silly about however small it is or however big it is. Nothing. And that's true. So, Sylvia says, I know what to do. I'll put a cause in motion that we eat properly, on my understanding of proper. And so what happens? Days go by, weeks go by, years go by. And then finally, a change takes place. The day Sylvia slips off this mortal coil, and she says, yeah, thanks a lot. You sure waited long enough to do it. Well, you know why they waited so long to do it? Because every day, Sylvia went to the table, and she saw herself eating with her left hand holding the knife, instead of seeing herself with her right hand holding the knife. I think that's the opposite way around, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's the opposite way around. She saw herself eating with the right hand holding the fork and the left hand holding the knife. Now, you see, we can get confused about things like that. We can get confused where we think we're saying the right thing. We think we are putting the right cause in motion, but we don't. Sylvia, how many times have you sometimes spelled a word and then after the 50th time of spelling, you say, am I spelling that right? You know? Am I spelling that word? How do you spell M-O-R-E? I mean, more. M-O-R-E. How do you spell more? M-O-R-E, M-O-R-E, M-O-R-E. And you say that 100 times. And you say that, and pretty soon when you're about the 75th time, you think, that doesn't sound right anymore. Somehow it doesn't sound right. And you know it. You know it. Like on the back of your hand. But you get to the point where it doesn't sound right anymore. Now, why doesn't it sound right anymore? Why doesn't it sound right anymore? It doesn't sound right anymore because you begin to doubt yourself. You begin to doubt your veracity. You begin to doubt your ability to think in letters and words. Silly, isn't it? But you begin to doubt it. And when you doubt it, then what happens? Then that which you think about takes place. You think it's wrong, even though it is very, very right. M-O-R-E spells more. Now, you can play the game. Ellen, what's more in Deutsch?
Mehr.
And Ingeborg, what's more in Italian?
Di più.
See, now, see, di più and mehr, you know, they're both spelled quite differently from M-O-R-E in English, more. So you can be thinking in a different language and getting yourself into trouble. Always be consistent. If you're thinking in English, stay with English. If you're thinking in that concept. Now, why did Ellen have so much trouble translating for me the first time out? She had trouble translating for me because she was thinking in German and trying to speak German. That is not right. She was thinking, hearing my English, and thinking what it meant in English, and then trying to say it in German. Now, what should she have done? If she had listened to me and heard me in German, her German would have been so easy, wouldn't it? Now, there were times when I would get up before the seminar and I would start speaking in German. And the translator would start translating me into English. Now, that is exquisite. That is exquisite. They knew they were to do the opposite. Whatever it was I did, they were to do the opposite. They were to speak in German when I spoke English, and English when I spoke German. So, I would criticize them when they would speak German, when I would speak German. I would say, you don't compare your perfect German to my perfect German. Just speak English when I speak German. When we learn to think in the language that we're going to speak, we will be perfect. So if Ellen, instead of thinking in English and then translating it into German, instead would think in German and hear me in German, she would translate perfectly. She would translate perfectly. Now, what has this got to do with anything? Sylvia spent her lifetime treating that we eat with the fork in the right hand and the knife in the left hand. And finally it came to pass. Why did it not come to pass the moment Sylvia first spoke it? Because she was translating it. She was translating it into what she didn't want. She was seeing what she didn't want being done. We come to Jesus the Christ, and we spoke about him earlier today. And what wouldst thou of me? He had a pure consciousness. We have a pure consciousness too. He had a pure consciousness, and his pure consciousness did not allow for judgment. He could not judge anything right or wrong. He only saw everything as an is. And because he saw everything as an is, when he saw a broken leg, he did not consider that bad. When he saw cancer, when he saw wholeness, when he saw vitality and life or death, he did not consider that evil. Even death, what did he call that?
Sleep.
Lazarus only sleepeth. Peter's mother only sleeps. You see, all of these people that he worked with and, so to speak, raised from the dead, like we like to say, they were only sleeping. He didn't do any big deal. The coroner came in and said they were dead. But he said they only sleep. They only sleep when they're that bad. Hey, remember Irene? We went into her hospital room. She was all shriveled up like some little prune. Nothing much left of her. And she says, I want to live. I said, all right, you can. You mean I can? Yes, you can. Like this, I'm all sure. Hey, you're not going to be like that. Fill out. Come on. We'll fill you up with water again. You're all shriveled up. Get some food down in you. Some attitude change. And within weeks, she was back to her normal self. That's impossible. But as long as she held in her thought the unjust criticism, you're going to die, you're going to die, then that's her problem. But when she took that as a compliment, when she took that as a statement that reminded her of her reality and her divinity. Hey, I don't have to die. Dr. Barley said so. I don't have to die. My doctor said I had to die. But what do they know? I could live eternally if I choose. But we have that choice to live eternally. We have that choice to do anything we want to do. That's right, we do. We have that choice. But we have to take life as a compliment, not as an evil thing. Just as Jesus couldn't see a dead person or a sick person or any person in lack or want or need, so we should develop our consciousness. Because if we're going the master path, we're not going the master path to change the world. How sad it is, the Greenpeace and all these things. They think they're going to change the world. They know they're not. They know they're not. What are they going to do? They're going to learn to follow discipline. They're going to learn to follow the rules. They're going to learn to follow what they're told to do. And when they follow what they're told to do, then they can be master of themselves. Because if a little child doesn't learn good manners and good habits, but he learns bad manners and bad habits, because it's one or the other, then he'll not be a welcome guest in people's homes. If a little child were not told what to do, if a little child were not told this is right and that's wrong, the little child would be 100% desirable wherever it went. Because it wouldn't have things that it's not supposed to do and that it's supposed to do. It just is its natural, pure, divine, wonderful self. But because the children are guided the way the parents were guided, the way their parents were guided, and on infinitum, it's stupid. Because they are guided away from their original purity and integrity. They're guided away from their naturalness, from the joy of living. A little child doesn't look at another little child and say, I want your body, you know. They don't say things like that. They don't have the hormones for it. Their natural attitude about themselves is, hey, we're all beautiful. Girls are different than boys, so big deal, you know. Girls wear skirts and boys wear pants most of the time. Big deal. You see, it's not the differences that count. It's the likenesses that count. Every one of us has the opportunity to take the world as a compliment to who we are and be beautiful in it. You know, they had a movie on Tarzan, and his wife took him from the jungle and brought him to the city to be some lord or something like that in the British court, in the British whatever. And when he came there, he was himself. Oh, he gave his barrel-chested howl for Tarzan's howl, you know. And he swung from the chandeliers, and he did a few other sort of odd things for a city boy. But if you saw the movie, and of course the movie was written by a person who had not been to the jungle, but if you saw the movie, they portrayed Tarzan as a gentle, loving, caring being who did not want to hurt another soul, who wanted to live harmoniously with everything in his world, who did not take the criticism of him jumping out the window and grabbing a vine and swinging across the yard, or jumping up and grabbing the chandelier and swinging back and forth and having a gay old time. They didn't take that as something negative. The people just looked at it and said, ah, the man from the jungle. He's natural. He's doing what comes naturally for his awareness of being in the jungle. Now, what about us? What are we natural for? Are we natural for being limited, being told what to do, being told how to live? Or are we so self-disciplined that whatever we do it lovingly and joyfully and peacefully and harmoniously? Really? What do we do? You see, we have to learn to be master of ourselves. And to be master of ourselves, we go to a school to learn it. We go have parents, or we have teachers, or we have different things. And we learn this mastership. And if we rebel in our heart, then we're not learning the mastership. Because the master doesn't rebel in anything. A master speaks his word if he wants something different and watches it happen. But he doesn't go contrary to anything. If a master is in his car and he has a distance to go and he'd like to go more rapidly than the law will allow, he will create himself going more rapidly than the law will allow, but he will not create himself being visible to the anti-law attitude. Ellen, how many times have we gone places and gotten there far sooner than you expected?
Many, many.
Now, did we violate the law? Did we speed, or did we do anything improper, like going from the top of the mountain to the bottom instead of going around, it went chowing straight down? It would seem like that time-wise, but otherwise, we'd just a normal drive. You see, when you master these things, when you are master of yourself, you put causes in motion. Now, did I confront you doing it, saying, look, this is what we're doing? Now, we'll look at your watch. Now, 2 seconds later, now look at your watch. Here we are 30 miles away, you know. You don't do that. You see, once you demonstrate your master self, you just do it. And if people are aware of it, that's interesting, but not necessary. Only through learning self-discipline do you come upon that. Do you understand? Only through learning self-discipline do you come upon the ability to be your master self, to manifest yourself where you wish, doing what you wish. But you don't do it to show off in front of people. You don't do it to let people know that you're so super, you're so wonderful. You just do it. And if anyone notices, great. But let's go for a moment to that word healing. Spiritual healing, which is the perfect healing, is no healing at all. No healing at all. Why do I say it's no healing at all? I say it's no healing at all because spiritual healing does not remember that it ever needed to be healed. When you have a spiritual healing, you do not remember that you were ever sick. The hospitals have no records of you ever being sick. Your family, friends, and neighbors, and whomever might know that you were sick, do not know that you were ever sick. They cannot conceive of you ever having been that way. Now, John, did you know that Ingeborg was dead yesterday? That she was absolutely dead, that she wasn't breathing, that she wasn't doing anything? Did you know that? No. Did you know that this happens to other people too? You see, we don't know it. Now, people write these out-of-body journeys. People write these books about near-death experiences. They've been happening eternally. They've been happening for all of time. It's just now that we have the media and the interest to write about those things that we put it down. But if you look at the hieroglyphics, if you look at the Hammurabi Code, if you look at all of these various ancient writings that we have, ancient histories that we have, this is legend. This is something that happens quite often. But we don't remember it. We don't remember it. A few have written it down because they happen to be scribes whose job it was to write things down. And of course they wrote down a few of their own little things too. Very fascinating, isn't it? When you come to think about it, unjust criticism is usually a disguised compliment. If we can recognize that when someone is criticizing us, they are complimenting us because what they're saying is, Ingeborg, if you go to sleep while I'm talking, then you are giving me a kick in the butt. You're saying my talk isn't really interesting. But if you say, I don't know, Herb, you put me to sleep. And then I say, I think maybe I better change my procedure. Maybe I better improve my way of giving things. Not that I shouldn't give it, but just improve my way of giving things. Or perhaps she's going to sleep because she doesn't get enough sleep at night. Or she's going to sleep because she has a lack of something in her bodily system. Or she's going to sleep because I bore the hell out of her. Now, what is the case? It doesn't matter. In any event, it would be an unjust criticism, wouldn't it? And what is the truth? It's disguised as a compliment. Because we think of it in that way. Now, for a moment, let us go back to the idea that any type of healing, any type of wholeness that we experience where we were not whole before, if it is spiritually oriented, totally, we do not remember whatever it was we had when we don't have it anymore. Can you do that with every area of your life? Not remember anymore? Remember our story about the Indian? This is for you. This is for you. This is for you. Don't remember those things that are now whole in your life. Don't remember those things that once gave you a problem. Just remember that you're God and all of God, and you're perfect and you're wonderful, and I love you.